Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello?
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
Welcome into You Pod to Win the Game. I'm Jory Epstein here with Frank Schwab on the rare Charles Free edition of You Pod to Win the Game. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great because Charles is not here. I don't need to hear about Josh McDaniels. Don't need to hear about how I said Cliff Kingsbury should be coach of the year a million years ago. I am excited to talk to you, Jory, about what the heck the NFL is doing with all these decisions.
Well, I'm excited about it, too. And yes, like you said, we've got a lot to break down on the NFL front. And anytime you come on the pod, the few times we potted together, I'm like, Frank knows everything and he has like a smart take on everything. So
I fooled you. Wow. You are the one person that agrees with. Can you like write up business cards for me or something?
Yeah. I'm not saying I agree with them, but I always find that super interesting. So to give y'all an overview on what we're going to be talking about today, I was in Minneapolis from Sunday to Tuesday for the NFL league meetings, which was super interesting. We had the owners all together voting on some resolutions that we'll get into. Some special teams rules have changed. Roger Goodell's contract is on the verge of being extended. Thursday night football can now be flexed, much to many fans' chagrin. And Green Bay is going to host the draft in 2025. So we'll get into all of that. We'll get into some football news. We are lucky to have Frank, who is a Denver resident and a Wisconsin native, to talk about the release of Brandon McManus and the draft going to Green Bay. And then we'll get into Aaron Rodgers and the injury concerns that did not take long to start. So starting off from the owners meeting news, Roger Goodell's contract has not yet been extended. He made sure to emphasize that to us when we talked to him on Tuesday. But Jim Irsay, the team owner of the Indianapolis Colts, who is always good for some interesting quotes, told us that they were on the verge of a 2027 contract, and he didn't stop there. He started to talk about some interesting league structures of, should we have a commissioner of football and maybe a separate CEO of business with how big the NFL has grown? And, oh, by the way, this could start as soon as 2027 after Roger Goodell's contract, to which one of the reporters asked him, is Roger done in 2027? And I just love his quote, so I'll read it, and then I want to hear your thoughts, Frank. When he was asked, is 2027 it for Roger? Jim said, you know, apparently, but you never know. You guys have seen some comebacks from Ali and Brady and different people. Roger's in great shape and loves what he does, but we're both the same age. He's 63, I'm 63. We're a couple months apart. He's worked so hard. So, Frank, do you think that Roger Goodell is no longer commissioner in 2027? And what do you think is happening with the league structure after that, if he's not?
I like how Roger Goodell is all of a sudden Muhammad Ali coming back to fight Frazier, right?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Yeah,
we covered a lot of ground here.
Great. Sounds good. I mean, it just makes sense. The funny thing is, you know, we look at Roger and he looks like a young guy. But like Jim said, he's 63. I mean, he's going to be, you know, 66, 67.
63 is young.
It's not bad, but do you want to keep putting in this work, these hours? You've made more money than you know what to do with. At some point, Roger Goodell's just going to say, you know what? I've had my time. I want to retire. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, just because he's going to be again, 66, 67. I don't think the league structure ever changes. I really don't. I get what Jim Irsay's saying, but there's always going to be a commissioner. There's always got to be one guy. Now, whether you add additional people to handle the business stuff, to handle the football stuff, they already kind of do that though, right? Like Troy Vincent is kind of the commissioner of football. Like if we're looking at the league structured that way, I don't think that's ever really going to change, no matter what Jim Irsay's saying. You might add people, but there's always going to be one guy who kind of honestly takes the slings and the arrows from everybody, from the owners. I mean, that's what Roger Goodell does really, really well, is that he sits up there, as you know very well, in his press conferences and takes all these questions from us and never says a word, never says anything interesting, because he's really smart at being the beacon of criticism. Roger Goodell, we think maybe that Roger Goodell's not been a great commissioner, whatever, however we grade him. I think the owners really love him. He makes them money. He makes sure that he takes on all the criticism. He's good for them. And if he wants to keep going, you know, after these 3 years, I think the owners would be fine with it. I think for them, he's a really good commissioner. It's just kind of what Roger wants to do next. I mean, do you see it changing? I don't ever see like some weird dual commissioner thing. That just seems weird to me. There's always going to just be one guy. I mean, the Pete Rozelle, the Paul Tagliabue, the Roger Goodell. I don't see that ever changing.
Yeah, it's a great point, Frank, because when you first hear Jim talk about it, he says, hey, we're not just a football league now. We're an entertainment business. We are an industry. People are making money off us in fantasy sports and secondary ticket markets and making the documentaries like Skycam, I believe it is, that is doing these documentaries. We should be doing that. But I think you make a good point that, yes, the NFL should be doing that, but they've got this whole C-suite of vice presidents and different people, a VP of broadcasting, a VP of public affairs, a VP of scheduling or whatever they call them. So I think you make a good point that this work is being done, and it's not necessarily about the manpower. It would be more how you're describing the manpower. I would be really interested, though, in 2027, because I think the question is, and again, we'll get into this with several decisions that were made this week. If they make a change, I think it's less about the work that needs to be done and more about the perception that the NFL wanna has. Is, do they want people to know just as much as they're a football league, they're an entertainment league? And if so, maybe you do have someone, because Roger Goodell is the external face for all of the work that's being done internally by his VPs for the most part. And so if you have someone else who's the external face, they would be able to sort of push that agenda of like, look, do you see who's top of the TV ratings every year?
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought of it that way. And that you're right. I mean, most people, aside from maybe Troy Vincent, we never see these VPs. They're not out there in front. They're not really, I mean, we see them here and there, but I don't think the casual fan knows who they are. It's all Roger. It's all that. So yes, if you get a dynamic personality that kind of can become that person, you give them some kind of title that is more than just, hey, the VP of NFL entertainment or whatever it's going to be in 3 years. I can see that. I can see that really being a smart move for the NFL in that way. So it might change that way. I agree with you there.
Last question on Roger Goodell. What do you think his legacy is going to be as NFL commissioner? Obviously, there's been collective bargaining agreements during his time. There's been media rights deal. Like you said, he makes the owners a lot of money. He generally is the punching bag, which, hey, will become even more important when Dan Snyder is no longer in the league, able to sort of take some of the blame away from them. What is Roger Goodell's legacy as commissioner?
I think he came along in a time that we criticize everything, social media era, all this kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of going to be how he's remembered. He's going to be remembered as the guy that was there for all the concussion stuff, the Ray Rice stuff and domestic violence and the mishandling of some things. Right or wrong, I mean, you know, Paul Tagliabue made his mistakes. Pete Rozelle made his mistakes. I mean, playing after Kennedy was shot, et cetera, et cetera. But those guys weren't under this intense scrutiny that Roger Goodell is. I don't know that Roger Goodell is going to be viewed from afar as this great commissioner that, you know, he should be first ballot Hall of Fame. Like, they like to put all the commissioners in the Hall of Fame. I don't know why. But I don't know that he's going to be that. But I could also see, look, I think Roger's his perception, his reputation's gotten a lot better the past few years. I really do. I think a lot of it, honestly, as dumb as it sounds, it has to go back to the COVID draft. I'm not as crazy, where it made him so much more personable. It was the first time it wasn't Robot Roger. It was, this guy is a person, he's relatable. I think him, you know, bringing on the booze at the draft and stuff like that, I think that has helped him become more human and not just this guy who's screwing up the NFL, which he's obviously not. I mean, the NFL, with everything else fracturing in our media segments, right? Like, everybody's ratings are going down. It's hard to get everybody in line on one thing. The NFL continues to grow, or at least keep the same. The ratings are unbelievable still. The revenue's unbelievable for the NFL. I think that that's going to be part of Rodgers' legacy. I just don't know if he's going to be able to overcome kind of all of this criticism he's gotten over the years. So people look at him as, hey, this was really a great commissioner. I don't know. I'm interested to see what you have to say, because I'm trying to view it as kind of a casual fan. And I think a casual fan doesn't really like Roger Goodell because he's always attached to all these bad news.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it. One, absolutely, the moment when Roger Goodell became more personable was when we're inside his home on the screen for the draft in 2020. He's sitting in this sort of comfortable armchair. I mean, that totally changed it. And that's kind of the theme here of what is the perception? Because a perception becomes the reality. I think that fans probably don't care to hate him as much as they used to. I think that they have other things they'd rather spend time on disliking. And I'm also not sure how much they care generally. They like booing him, but I don't think there's been anything lately that has been controversial enough for fans to really be talking about Roger Goodell on a regular basis. Moving on, we've got a special teams change entering the NFL in 2023. So if you fair catch a kickoff within the 25, your team can spot the ball at the 25-yard line. Frank, what do you think about this? Because I'm really interested to see what you think about this, because I think the most interesting line here was, one, the NFL is trying to do this on a basis of, hey, we've got too many concussions. We need to reduce them somehow. Kickoffs are dangerous because when you have so much space between the two teams, the speed at which the defenders are coming, there's just a lot going on. And so they have these concussion lawsuits, and then it's like, well, we have to do something. We can't do nothing, they told us. Why do you think the NFL is making this rule? And do you think kickoffs are safe? Because that was another thing that they told us in the press conferences. They would not guarantee that the future of kickoffs is safe in the NFL.
This move was basically, look, I think if the NFL is being honest, they'd love to eliminate the kickoff. I just don't think they can. I just thought that's the one thing fans, for some reason, fans would really revolt against. And I get it. You watch an NFL game, there's a kickoff. You got to start it. You're not just starting with, hey, Patrick Mahomes is trotting on the field, even if 90% of them are touchbacks, it seems, right now. And I think that this move is a way for the NFL to say, all right, we're going to have a ceremonial kickoff, but nobody's returning these things anymore. I think we're going to see very few kickoff returns. And that's fine with me, actually. Look, it's one of those things, Jory, where people can't complain about, oh, the NFL mishandled concussions. They don't care about player safety. And also, where's my kickoff? Well, I need a kickoff. Well, no, they're doing this for player safety. This is a result of all the backlash. And I think that it's fine with me. I love kickoff returns. Seeing Cordarrelle Patterson or whoever take it to the house is still awesome. But concessions are going to be made with player safety. So I'm fine with it basically just being this is going to be ceremonial. I will tell you something, though. I think this rule's in college, right? I don't watch a ton of college football anymore, especially kickoffs. Every time a guy fair catches it, I'm like, what are you doing? Oh my God, they're going to get the ball at the 6-yard line. No, it goes to the 25. It's going to take me a long time to get used to that. But other than that, this rule is just kind of a whatever to me. I'm like, whatever. We're not going to have many more kickoffs, but we already don't have many. So it's one of those things we talk about on May 25th, because there's just not a lot else going on in the NFL world.
Yeah, I would say I'm not super convinced that this is going to make the NFL safer, because Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated got some numbers that basically showed of 2,700 kickoffs last year, 19 of them had concussions. So on 99.3% of plays, there was not a concussion. 0.7% of these returns. And even among those concussions, they weren't all the returner. And the theory behind this rule is the returner is the one who's entering a danger zone, essentially. So I'm not super convinced. I think one thing that was pretty interesting is the NFL kind of had their football rules votes. And then at the end of league meetings, there's always a privileged session, owners only. And they voted on this rule during that, which was super unusual. I've never seen it before. I'm not saying it's never happened, but it's definitely not the norm, which makes me, as the reporter, think, did someone go into that privileged meeting and be like, hey, concussion lawsuit, we know you don't like this for competitive advantage, but if you want to keep your money and you want to not get sued, you should probably make this change. That was interesting to me. The other thing that was interesting is that the NFL talked about sort of this, the two factors in this decision, which is, one, how do you make the game safer? Health and safety changes to the game are not always comfortable. There definitely takes some getting used to, whether that's with blocking, whether that's with tackling. But there's also the competitive nature of it, of is this the most competitive and exciting play that the NFL could have? I think they said 38% of kickoffs were returned last year. Is there another play they were asking that might return 60% of kickoffs? And so I think that as we see leagues like the XFL spring up and basically be a trial ground for these new rules, we might see different elements of the game. And while some people will be traditionalists and like, hey, this is what I was watching in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, even earlier, other people like, hey, if you want the most exciting game, there might be other changes coming that don't only have to take away. You might also be adding to the game.
Yeah. What do you think of that? I mean, you know, some things have been thrown around about like, oh, you can, you know, have this play for, you get it at the whatever yard line, and we're going to, I'm fine with just, it's going to be to 25 yard line every time. Like, let's not really dig too deep into this. It's like the onside kick. Like, I don't mind that the outside kick is hard to get. Like, I don't need like some, if you convert a 4th and 22, you're going to get the ball back. Like, I think they're tinkering with this way too much and overthinking this when you hear some of these thoughts thrown out there.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of emphasis being placed on something that does not often or meaningfully impact games. Occasionally it does, but and that was another thing. Special teams coaches across the league were pretty adamantly opposed to this rule, saying like,
of course they are. it's cutting out like a fourth of their job. Yeah.
Right. Like, this is not super dangerous. There's going to be confusion with the new rules, and that could lead to more injuries. But I think that, again, these changes are not super substantial to the life of the NFL game as a whole. When you think about the 60 minutes of clock time, like, this is not impacting more than, what, 15 seconds a game? Maybe 60, 70 seconds at most.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And on that note of changes that are being made perhaps more ceremonially than actually meaningfully, the NFL just approved a resolution at this meeting that they can flex games from Thursday Night Football in and out. It was pretty fascinating. Let's start off with the point that this actually went up for a vote at the March meetings, and it was voted down. They need 24 of 32 votes to approve. They only had 22 then. And at that point, the resolution said that they could flex a Thursday Night Football game with 15 days advance notice, which, forget the health and safety implications, because that was not the conversation that was being had around this. What about the fans who book travel? I mean, you book 3 months in advance to go see your team and you're like, great, Thursday night game, I'll take the weekend there. Or Thursday night game, it's after work, maybe if you work on Sundays. And then, oh, by the way, 2 weeks beforehand, you no longer have your game there. And I actually asked Hans Schroeder, who's the NFL executive vice president and CEO of NFL Media, like, what would you tell fans who are booking travel during this time? And he kind of gave me this answer of, well, fans are used to the flex. We flex games from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. all the time. And I'm like, yeah, 3 hours, 3 days, super similar from travel. This is probably not going to happen. And if so, maybe once this year. There are restrictions on this. First of all, the way that this got approved was now you need 28 days advance notice. So you have to decide basically a month in advance that you're so sure that Thursday game is not correct, when we know so much can change in 4 weeks of the NFL. Secondly, this is only an option weeks 13 through 17 of the season. So essentially the last 5 weeks of the season, although week 18, there is not Thursday night football. And third, you can do this at most twice a year and at most once to a team. So you really can't often use this rule, and you'd have to have sort of this high bar, and the NFL was saying even a higher bar than a Sunday or Monday night flex, which leads me to believe that they're just trying to placate Amazon.
Yeah,
what do you think, Frank?
That's probably it. I will say this, and getting back on the hypocrisy subject here, I want to go through people's Twitter feeds, because the people who are complaining about them implementing the Thursday night rule, I want to see how many times you complained about the Thursday night matchup in past years, right? This is why they're doing it, folks, because you're sitting there tweeting all night, or Facebook or Instagram, TikTok, whatever, you're saying, oh my God, Atlanta, Carolina, this is the stupidest matchup ever. I hate Thursday night football. These matchups stink. Well, this is why they're doing it. They're trying to get better matchups, because you complained about it. And, you know, some of these people are complaining now about the flex, or yeah, they're going to be put out. Again, it's 28 days advance notice. I feel bad for, there are obviously going to be people who are put out by this. Although, how many Rams fans are traveling to New Orleans for that week 14 game? I don't know, but probably a few. And I think that actually, when I looked at the schedule, I'm like, actually these five, Thursday night games that they could do look pretty good, except for Rams Saints, which I think will be the one to get flexed. I don't think it's going to be used often. I'm fine getting rid of Thursday night football altogether, but that's a totally different subject. If you're going to have Thursday night football, we want the best matchups possible. I think that all this is kind of fair. Like you have enough advance notice. You're not doing it a ton. The bar is going to be pretty high. I'm kind of fine with it. As long as we're going to have Thursday Night Football, we want the best matchups. And yes, people are going to be put out, but you know what? I mean, it's 70,000 people at the stadium and what, 5 million people watching on TV. So it just kind of is what it is. You're never going to make everybody happy. That's kind of how I feel about this.
Right. That's the irony, is that I agree this is a business decision over a fan-friendly decision, but it actually is a fan-friendly decision in the broader sense of the word, because this is better for more fans. As Jerry Jones told us, he said about only 7% of our fans will ever step foot inside of a stadium. So, yes,
is that right? 7%?
That's what Jerry said.
Do you believe
that?
I mean, Jerry says a lot of crazy things, as you know.
I
think that's true? 7%?
I actually think it's pretty close to true. We'd have to look at the exact number, but I think the point is, like, way more fans are watching. So, yes, they want the ratings, but it actually does impact the game and make the game more exciting. I actually think also, if you're Amazon, it might be less likely that you get a flex and more likely that next year when the NFL makes its schedule, they put even more thought and attention into what are these Thursday night games on weeks 13 to 17, because no one wants to flex a game. It's inconvenient for everybody.
No, nobody wants to.
Because look, the broadcasters have booked their travel plans. The logistics people have figured out how to get the equipment there and book the hotels. So
it's kind of embarrassing to the teams too. It's kind of embarrassing to say, hey, Rams, you're 2-11 right now. You got to go. Like, nobody wants to do that, right?
So while I get why fans who go to games would be disappointed by this, and I think that they're clearly not the ones with this decision in mind, or the decision is clearly not being made with them in mind, I do agree. I kind of get it. And I think that, again, this rule, the special teams rule, both of them are on one-year trial periods. And so it could be we don't even see this next year, then they have the trial period go over into next year. My takeaways were, The NFL cares more about the broadcast numbers than they do about fans and stadiums, and they care more about Amazon and streaming, which is the future of their broadcast, than they do about their traditional TV partners. That said, those are the messages I'm taking away. I don't think this is going to come into action very often.
As a betting man, I would take the under on 1.5. Let's put it that way. I think Rams Saints is a goner, but the rest of them will stay.
Frank Schwab, Yahoo betting expert, here to provide this. And another thing you're an expert on, Frank, is the state of Wisconsin. Green Bay is officially going to host the NFL draft in 2025, which is fascinating to me. I went to Green Bay for the first time this past season for the Cowboys-Packers game, and I flew into Milwaukee, drove up there, drove back to Milwaukee, then took a train to Chicago and flew back to Dallas. And Dallas is a pretty much you can get anywhere city from there. So when you think about this, I mean, we've got the element of tradition, Lambeau Field and the Packers. You've got the infrastructure concerns. It'll be great for the Green Bay economy, but this is by far the least accessible city the NFL draft has ever been held in. What do you think of this decision? What do you think it means for the city of Green Bay? And do you agree with the NFL choosing Green Bay as the city which they're going to put the draft in?
I mean, I eventually think it'll work out fine, because everything the NFL does kind of works out fine in the end. But you're right about everything. Let me start with the positives, because I think that it's great to highlight Green Bay, Wisconsin. Green Bay is by far, this is not even an argument, the most unique professional sports city that we have in the United States. There's nothing like it. It would never even, if some city like this of 107,000 people tried to get a professional sports team, it would be laughed out of the room. The Green Bay Packers, if you go through the history, they survived so much, just lawsuits that they had, a fan falling off the stands, that they needed the stock sale and all this kind of stuff. They survived somehow, some way. They are the flower coming out of the concrete in professional sports, right? There should not happen. Green Bay, Wisconsin, having an NFL team and this incredible stadium and this incredible tradition should not exist. It is awesome that we're going to be able to see that and celebrate it and highlight it. And being from the great state of Wisconsin, I feel proud of that. And it's so cool. It's Green Bay is cool. If you've been there for a game, you know, you understand. It's great. But as you said, it's really tough to get there. It's really tough to stay there. God bless my mom, she went to a game for the first time last year. She lives in California. Now she was in Wisconsin. And she was like, how do I get a hotel? I'm like, well, mom, you're kind of out of luck, because those, as you know, they fill up so fast, months in advance. There's not a lot of hotels. I think this is still the case that visiting teams stay 40 minutes away in Appleton, Wisconsin, because Green Bay does not have a hotel big enough basically to have an NFL team and all their meeting rooms, the requirements and stuff. So how are they going to have this draft? that had 300,000 people at it this year. I mean, that is literally three times the size of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Right.
That's going to be there for the draft. I think a lot fewer people are going to go, but I think the NFL made that concession. They said, all right, we might not be able to tell the world that we had 300,000 people in the draft this year, but it's going to be a really cool experience for those who go, for those who watch on TV. Green Bay deserves this. They're never getting a Super Bowl. Let me tell you, somebody lived in Wisconsin for a long time. Nobody wants to go to Green Bay in February for a Super Bowl in an outdoor stadium. I think overall it's going to work really, really well and be really cool, even if the attendance is down and the people who go are going to complain a little bit about the two-hour drive from Milwaukee. I think it's fine. It's fine to do this for 1 year and not have this unbelievable, you know, Nashville filling the streets for hundreds of thousands of fans.
Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of the key numbers, which is the 300,000 attendees at this year's draft in Kansas City, and that being three times as many people as live in the city of Green Bay. For context, Lambeau Field's capacity is about 81,441, according to the great Google and Wikipedia machine. So this is, This is close to four times as many people as would come to a game at Lambeau. So this is significant. This is not going to be something that like every fan can stay somewhere. It's funny. I was talking to a team executive at the league meetings this week whose like in-laws live in Green Bay. And he's like, I made very clear to them that we are Airbnb-ing their house. Because like, do you know how much they can make off of that?
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of refreshing after everything we've talked about in terms of where's the money, where is the where's the glitz and the glamour? Last year, the draft was in Las Vegas. This year, the Super Bowl is going to be in Las Vegas. It's kind of refreshing for the NFL to be like, hey, maybe we won't get as many people. Maybe this won't be the same sort of spectacle, but it's going to be something that's like really cool and traditional and meaningful. And in that regard, I agree. I like that the NFL is doing that and that they're doing it in a month where it's way better and way more reliable to travel to Wisconsin.
What did you think of your time in Green Bay? I mean, because I got so used to it covering, I covered them for 3 years and obviously I'm from there and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes you look around and you're like, this is crazy that there's this, it's really a small town. I think the second tallest building, or maybe the tallest building, is the hospital there, which is like nine stories tall, whatever those stories are. There are times where you take a step back and you're like, this is crazy this exists here. And it used to be even weirder because Titletown has kind of taken up a lot of space. It used to be just right in the middle of a neighborhood. It was like, here's the Kmart, here's a gas station, here's a Subway, here's Lambeau Field, here's Pizza Hut. It was absolutely crazy. What did you think of your time there? I mean, I'm sure people who have never been there have put it on their bucket list and should, honestly.
Yeah, no, it was definitely interesting. I mean, it was kind of part of the experience driving up from Milwaukee and going to Sheboygan and seeing the entire state of Wisconsin. Like you said, just marveling at how unlikely it is that a team like this has an NFL team, much less an NFL team that's been very good for a long time and had star quarterbacks. I mean, I think we all thought about it a little more acutely recently when Simone Biles' husband signed with the Packers and the gymnast was like, hey, any recs for Green Bay? And everyone's like, yeah, go to Chicago.
It reminded me a little bit of
the Orchard Park feel where the Bills play because you kind of drive up and you see these streets and all of the houses are just sort of decked out and like every house is thinking about this game. Because again, growing up in Dallas where the Cowboys are obviously massive, but the stadium's not near a bunch of houses. And it's not like that's the only thing happening in the city that day, even though it might be the biggest thing happening in the Metroplex that day. So I did love, I mean, just like the houses that were right across the street from Lambeau and how much spirit they had. It was fun.
It's a college town feel, and it's so cool.
It is,
but even
smaller than a college town. And again, I didn't have that typical experience.
Oh, Madison's much bigger than Green Bay.
I'm sure. And like going to the University of Texas growing up, I mean, Austin and like the people that you're getting in those games, like super different. But it does. It has its charm, and you kind of are like, hey, there's history here, and like you got to get there at least once.
Oh, yeah. I've always said this. Anybody who has not been to Lambeau Field and is a true, honest NFL fan, just go. Don't go in December. Maybe go in September, October, maybe. But yeah, it is a unique experience in professional sports, no question.
Absolutely. And then the last bit of news from league meetings before we get into the NFL news is the Commanders sale update. So the Commanders have a purchase and sale agreement in place with the Josh Harris Group. The sale has not yet been approved and finalized and voted on by the NFL. I actually wrote a piece that came out Wednesday night on Yahoo Sports, kind of breaking down why this is taking so long, which in short is there's a lot of limited partners. There's a lot more sources of financing than usual. And as rich as Josh Harris is, and as silly as it feels to even say this, even the wealthy can't really afford NFL teams right now. And as one source told me, yeah, this price on its face might be about $6.05 billion, but it's really more like $8 to $9 million that you need between the stadium that's going to need to be built, between the repairs that you need, between the debt that you're going to have to repay. And so there's a lot of factors here. And there were two quotes I had in my story that I want your opinion on, and they had different opinions. And the idea is, with this unusual financial structure for the deal of the Commanders that's coming, it's not what the Broncos got from the Walton Penner Group. It's not what David Tepper paid for the Carolina Panthers. Is this the future of NFL ownership, which is that the NFL is going to have to loosen or at least redefine their standards of financial security a little bit? Or is the NFL just trying to get Dan Snyder out? And I did have one source tell me, if this wasn't Snyder, this deal doesn't happen. The league is bending over backward to make this deal happen. So what do you think about this deal? And also, should fans care? To me, it leads into who might own future teams, because this is sort of a new look at the precedent.
Yeah, I saw that quote and I was nodding my head like, yep. You got to get Daniel Snyder out. If this is what you got to do, this is what you got to do. It makes the league a ton better. I think that, yes, I mean, we skipped $5 billion, by the way. It went from $4.65 billion setting for the Broncos, which set a record, and we just skipped over five. It went straight to six. And if the prices are going to keep going up, and this is a Washington team, by the way, that the stadium, like you said, is in just garbage. It's the worst stadium in the NFL. They need a new stadium. They need to rebuild a lot of things there, and not just structurally. Let's put it that way. And they still went for $6 billion. What happens if the Cowboys ever come up for sale or something? You are, like you said, I mean, you're going to have a tough time finding the traditional, basically single owner here. You're going to have more limited partners like they have, and making more concessions. I do think this is the future, because like you said, even for the rich guys in the world, this is hard. That's a hard price tag. That is hard. So yes, I do think this is important from that aspect, to see how this goes, to see if this is kind of a new model for things. But absolutely positively, this has to do with Daniel Snyder. I don't think that any other owner, they'd be like, well, we'll just wait on it. No, you got to get Danny out of there as quick as you can.
Danny, you guys are on a nickname basis. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, no, I agree with you on that valuation. It'll be interesting, because I think there's some sentiment around the league. The Seahawks will be the next team to be put up for sale. And I don't know, will that be more expensive because it'll happen later? Will it be less expensive because it doesn't have the strategic position of the Washington Commanders? I didn't include all this in my story, but I had one source telling me, like, look, one of the reasons Bezos was so interested in the Washington Commanders is because he runs companies that work in highly regulated industries. And if you have the Commanders stadium, you can wine and dine all the decision makers in Congress while there. So there's a lot of opportunities that Dan Snyder didn't necessarily avail himself, and especially toward the end when he wasn't the most popular guy in town.
Daniel Snyder couldn't figure things out? What?
Oh, now he's Daniel. We got Danny.
I'm back to formalities with him.
So I think it'll be interesting to see what this means for other franchises. Yeah. But look, like, the reason that the owners are forcing Dan Snyder out is probably not number one because of the investigations into him. I think that's number two. Number one is because they believe this should be like a top quartile revenue earner every year, and the Commanders
absolutely
are not.
Yes.
And that is,
I mean, he has run that franchise into the ground, and just the real estate alone should be, there's a reason I went for $6 billion. That's
it. Yeah. And then when you look at the limited partners, someone was telling me, like, he's making sure to get business and political leaders from DC, Maryland, and Virginia. So you can kind of say, like, hey, let's like fork up some public funding for this stadium. So this is all very strategic. And I know that this is a little bit inside the business of sports for some people listening, perhaps, but I do think it's interesting. And I do think that even y'all who root for other teams, your team may be impacted by the model that we see here, because this is the changing landscape of sports ownership. We're going to move on to the NFL news from OTAs, after this quick word from our sponsors.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, we're back. Time for a little football news now that we got through everything that happened at league meetings this week. Number one, Frank coming to us from Denver. The Broncos released kicker Brandon McManus. He broke the news himself, tweeting that he was informed of his release 2 days ago. And now as we record on Thursday, he's a Jacksonville Jaguar. What does this mean for the Broncos? What does this mean for the Jaguars? And were you surprised by this move?
Yeah, surprised, especially by the timing. I mean, when you're cutting your kicker in late May, like, you're kind of going down the road of we might have a tough time replacing this guy, figuring out our kicker situation. And any team that's had a kicker problem that they're trying to fix, you know how frustrating that can be. I mean, you know from Dallas late last year that it could be a real, real problem. I don't think it, and obviously has been mentioned a million times, McManus was the last guy from the Super Bowl 50 team. And it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it really is. And especially in NFL years where it goes so fast, where it's like, everybody from that team is moved on elsewhere, retired like Peyton Manning or whatever. So that was kind of the headline for me that Super Bowl 50 team no longer has any representation on the roster. McManus has always been to me a good, solid kicker, but not a great one. I mean, obviously benefited from the thin air, but he is a veteran. He's reliable. He's not great. He's not in your, you know, Harrison Butker kind of tier, but I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are quite happy to have a reliable veteran in a year that they think they could win that division. I think it's a good move for them. I think the Broncos, I don't know what was happening behind the scenes there. It's hard to start over a kicker in late May when free agency is pretty much done. The draft is obviously done. You can't draft somebody like San Francisco or New England did. So it was shocking to me that they would move on from him right now.
Yeah. I agree, and I'm no expert on NFL kickers, but just looking at the stats, what surprised me a little bit is so the Jaguars cut their kicker, Riley Patterson, in conjunction with signing Brandon McManus, and Riley Patterson's only 2 years in. He definitely hasn't had the prolific career that Brandon McManus has had, but he's been more productive and more reliable the last 2 years. So I'm wondering why they were the ones to do this. I mean, if you look at the numbers in the last 2 years, McManus has made 83.9% of his field goals in 2021 and 77.8% in 2022, compared with 92.9% in 2021 for Riley and 85.7% for 2022. And then extra points as well. I mean, you had 97% and 92.6% from Brandon McManus, 100% and 97.3% for Riley Patterson. So he's not looking better on any of the numbers. And I get that he's been around longer, but I'm curious why they thought this would be an upgrade. How much of this is culture, having a vet in the room? Was there something with Riley Patterson? There's an injury that I'm not familiar with. I mean, this was a little bit surprising.
Sounds like the Broncos should just sign Riley Patterson, right? Like, just,
that's what I was thinking.
Make it a swap. Like, could have worked out this trade. Get Doug Peterson and Sean Payton in a room somewhere. Figure this thing out.
Yeah, maybe we've got a Jacksonville expert of a listener who can tweet at us and let us know what was going into this. But I'm not surprised that McManus got claimed. I actually thought the Cowboys might take a look at him. They need a kicker. Mm-hmm. Cowboys fans are pretty
disappointing. Yeah, that was the team where I was like, I mean, what was the quote that came out a couple weeks ago? I'm sure you either heard it, wrote it, saw it, whatever.
Like
everyone in the world is being considered. Like, I was starting to go backyard and kick some field goals. I was like, hey, Jerry, give me a call. Everybody's in this thing. I got a shot.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I always love the special teams movement. On another note of special teams, because what more do you want to talk about in May than special teams? The Jets are working out punter Matt Araiza, who the Bills had drafted and then cut in training camp last year after accusations of rape came out against him. Our Dan Wetzel has reported on some of the reasons that the local government is no longer pressing charges. They have felt they don't have enough evidence, some evidence that might even conflict the allegations that were made against Matt Araiza. Were you surprised how quickly Matt Araiza got a workout from the Jets? And what do you think the reaction will be like if they ultimately sign him?
Yeah, and I mean, this nebulous, like, distractions thing will come up. You don't want your punter being a guy who the media is flocking around. I don't know. I don't know really where I stand with this, to be honest. I think that, you know, there's no charges, so why? I mean, right. He was obviously, and I, real quick, shout out to Dan, our colleague, who's done a great yeah. job on this story. Phenomenal. Why shouldn't he be allowed to continue his career, I guess? But then, I don't know. I just don't know. It's a very difficult space to be in. But just from a football aspect, again, if you're the Jets, you already have this circus in town with the quarterback. Do you want your punter to be another one? I guess if he's as good as he was in college, I mean, we all know how great he was at San Diego State as a punter.
Right.
I just don't know. I don't know where I stand on it. Do you have a take on this? I'd be interested to hear it, because I kind of don't know where I stand on Matt Araiza right now.
Yeah, I think my number one take from this whole situation is just how, like, confusing and messy it all is, because something happened. It might not have been criminal. It might have been with consent, and it might have been with a misunderstanding about the age that was a factor in this, because the girl was 17. She allegedly was telling people she was 18. And I think when it comes down to it, while I understand, like, what bothers me most is if she wasn't telling the truth, I feel so sorry for other sexual assault and rape victims that anyone would not tell the truth about this, because it hurts everyone's credibility and ability to tell it. If she is telling the truth, well, it just is a reminder that the evidence is so tricky in these situations. It's often hard to know exactly what's going on, and it just leads to these, like, rough situations for everyone. So I don't feel like we could have a clean takeaway, a clean moral reckoning here. If evidence continues to show that he didn't do it, like, that's really frustrating for him. And we don't want to swing too much the pendulum to where people who aren't doing something are getting in trouble for it. But you also want to make sure that we are listening to sexual assault and rape survivors. And so I think that it's not shocking he got a tryout. And it also wouldn't shock me if the Jets don't sign him now, but are sort of making sure they know what's there. If they don't think he's worth it on the field and significantly an upgrade, I don't think they sign him. I don't know that they're going to be like, we really don't want to lose him. So it might be the type of thing where you work him out now and either you consider bringing him in training camp if he's still available, or, like, July 4th weekend news dump, like, sign him. All of a sudden people show up at training camp, because, I mean, I'm probably going to be out at the Jets OTAs next week or the week after, and I could see them not wanting him there right away. I don't think that for them, the upside of getting a few more kicks in with the punt protection team or whatever it is going to outweigh the distraction it will cause, particularly when Aaron Rodgers already suffered an injury in practice.
I think that definitely all very well said, very well said. Like everybody else, kind of conflicted on everything going on there.
On that note, the Jets, our colleague Charles Robinson wrote a great piece this week talking about the roller coaster of emotions. I think he said it's not a roller coaster. It's actually more like a space shuttle of emotions that Jets fans are on right now. Aaron Rodgers goes out to practice. It seems like he did some sort of strength training workout he wasn't used to, tweaked his calf. He says it's no big deal. Obviously, it's a really big deal to Jets fans. Do you think that this is the beginning of an injury issue for him in New York? Do you think Jets fans should be concerned? Is this a reminder of, like, hey, that 65% of plays threshold for the Jets to have to give up a first round pick is a little bit shaky? What was going through your mind when you saw this news?
Yeah, and I think it's more what could happen. It's a reminder that you just signed up for a 39-year-old quarterback who's going to turn 40 in December. It's not the calf injury itself, I don't assume, is going to be that big of a deal. I mean, it's right. Again, he's got 2 months before even training camp starts. Like, if it's keeping him out that long, then that is a problem. I don't think it will be, but it's a reminder. Look, part of the deal with signing up for a quarterback of his age is injury issue is always around the corner. He's stayed pretty healthy. I mean, as healthy as a quarterback really can, but it's it's always going to be there, his age. It's impossible to get around that conversation, not just the injury thing, but just his play falling off a cliff. I mean, we saw him not really be the MVP last year, right? And who's to say he's not going to just completely fall apart this year? It's at least on the table. Look, Tom Brady is not he's not the rule. Like, he is absolutely the exception. A guy who's leading the NFL in passing touchdowns at age 44. That probably won't happen again in our lifetime. Lou, do I think Aaron Rodgers is going to fall off a cliff? No, I don't. But kind of this injury drama right now in late May when we have nothing else to talk about, I don't think the injury itself is a big deal. I think that it's just forecasting, like, hey, you got to beware that this might not work out as great as Jets fans hope, or even I hope, because I've bet on the Jets winning the Super Bowl, as I talked about before. It's more tenuous than you'd like for this brand new, shiny, four-time MVP quarterback coming in.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely no sure bet. I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to fall off a cliff, and I know you got to that point at the end of it, but this is a guy who's played very well for a very long time. I think what would be more likely is we saw when Tom Brady went to the Buccaneers that at the beginning of the year, there was just some growing pains, some adjustments. What was it? Him holding up the number four. He didn't realize fourth down.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there will be some adjustment time, but I think that he's still just such a talented quarterback. And the way Von Miller was describing it to me when I interviewed him a few weeks ago, that Aaron uses his mind to manipulate defenders, I think that that is something that you don't lose in that age. And he's not purely relying on like otherworldly physical talent. He is an incredible quarterback, but I think he's done different things. That's not like he's scrambling all of the time, as that's like the number one thing in his game. So,
and also the infrastructure. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just think the infrastructure around the Jets means that he doesn't have to be a top three quarterback. Right. He's a 10th best quarterback in the NFL, and it's so much better than number 32 that the Jets are going to be like, wow, oh my God, this guy could actually hit a receiver in stride. Awesome. Like, so yeah, on top of, you know, like you said, the mental side of the game, Aaron Rodgers is just masterful at, and also the expectations on, there's gonna be a lot of attention on him, and it's gonna be a huge story all year. And I believe they start on Monday Night Football, all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, Aaron Rodgers, if he's a top 12 quarterback in the NFL this year, the Jets are going to be just fine.
Yeah, no, I think that's our headline right there. If Aaron Rodgers is a top 12 quarterback, the Jets are just going to be just fine. But yeah, I think it's true. And I think he's going to be playing with a much better defense than he's had in recent years, a much better set of skill players than he's had. And so he'll have some of that talent around him. When I think about the way that he injured his calf, apparently doing these lunges with a medicine ball, I think it's a reminder of like, yes, I believe that Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, all these people should go to these offseason practices, even if they're optional, because you're the leader of the team and you want to be setting the tone. But should
also,
Aaron
don't
Rodgers
do lunges. That's that. I think that's my takeaway. Don't do lunges. They're unnecessary. Come on. Just cut the
that, line. That's what I was going to say, is that C-Rod put in his column that like this is not something he'd been doing recently. And I think that the Jets got to be really careful with it. Of yes, you want to make sure that a guy is staying pliable in his late 30s into 40-year-old career season. But I don't know. You got to be careful because like, I mean, I'm 28 years old and my hips get tight and my ankles get tight and my knees get
tight. I'm 28 too. That's awesome. I didn't realize we were the same age. That's great.
Yeah, just like Jim Irsay and Roger Goodell, just a
just
couple
like,
months
just
apart.
Like, I'm probably the Irsay of that group, though, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that that's interesting. And I think the other point that our colleague Charles made is Zach Wilson apparently looked good, according to Charles' sources in this practice.
I'm sure.
Frank is super skeptical about this, but it is a reminder for Jets fans of like, Zach Wilson isn't disappearing for the next couple of years. And I don't think it's crazy. Like, if I were a betting woman, which I'm not, I know you are a betting man, to bet that Zach Wilson plays at least one game this year, I would take that bet. I don't know if it'll be a lot, but I'm not saying 5 or 7. And if I'd get to under 3, but think about it. If Aaron Rodgers gets hurt at all and you feel like you have a team and it's week 4 or you're playing an opponent that you think you have a chance with because your team is so good around you, like you don't risk it with Aaron Rodgers.
Right. If he has this calf injury in week 4, like you said, he might be like, let's sit this one out, Aaron. And also part of it, too, the Jets don't have a great offensive line. It's okay. But I mean, he's not exactly, there's not a fortress in front of him. I mean, he's going to get hit. And like, let's say he, you know, scrambling out of bounds in week 3 or something like that and pulls his calf. I think you could see it. I think you could see it. And Oh, that Jets locker room is going to be so downtrodden. If it's like, yeah, if it's on a Wednesday, it's
very clear how they felt
yes,
about that.
Yes, yes. If Robert Saleh's up there on a Wednesday going, hey guys, all right, Zach's our guy. Yeah, the groans in that meeting room are going to be audible from Castle Rock, Colorado. So it is very interesting. This, and I think also another part of this story is get ready for every single thing Aaron Rodgers does to be just magnified by 25 times. You know, we talked about Green Bay and how it's a small town, and that media corps is actually very good. They're tough on the team, all that kind of stuff. It ain't New York, where everything Aaron Rodgers does is going to be blown out of proportion, including a calf injury in late May when he still has 2 months before training camp.
Which Aaron Rodgers will love, even if he acts like he doesn't.
he's eating that up. Yeah, this is just the dynamics between Aaron Rodgers and that media corps is going to be unbelievable. Though everything about Aaron Rodgers
to the Jets, media corps absolutely. Someday, so careful what you say.
Everything about Aaron Rodgers to the Jets is awesome from our standpoint of like stuff to talk about, stuff to write about. It is going to be absolutely positively fascinating.
Yes, it's true. And I know that Charles and I did an episode a couple weeks ago and we were talking about what are the biggest stories of the offseason in terms of things we can actually learn between now and training camp, between now and preseason games. And Aaron Rodgers continues to be one, especially with this health situation of like, is he going to practice at all now? Even if he's healthy, do you want him practicing? How much do you want him going through a practice? I know there's no contact, but what if something happens? And when you mentioned the offensive line that the Jets have, then almost makes me wonder, Frank, if at number 15, rather than taking Will McDonald, they should have taken a tackle.
Yeah, I would have been on board with that, too. I can't lie. But we'll see. If Aaron Rodgers just went to wherever, Houston or something, we wouldn't be like, oh, my God, did they make the wrong choice at 15? Should they? It's going to be such a unnatural existence for everybody that I can't wait. It's going to be such a circus.
It'll be a lot of fun. I think that's all we've got on the NFL news front. But Frank, this was fun. We should have more Charles-free episodes going forward. Enjoyed this conversation. It flowed. All right. Thanks to all of you for listening. We will be back with another episode of You Pod to Win the Game next Thursday. We're going to be switching up a little bit this offseason, going to later in the week so we can account for the news that happens during the week. But on Twitter, I am Jory Epstein, at Jory Epstein. Frank is at Yahoo Schwab. If you want to follow the Charleses, even though they did not join today's show, we've got at Charles Robinson and at Forverts. Our star producer, Stone, is at SJ Rochelle. And help us keep Therese's legacy alive. You can go to breakingtea.com/Therese for the all juice tea or hoodie, or support the Therese Paylor Scholarships at Howard U and Mizzou directly. I know at owners meetings this week, we saw someone wearing one of the new all juice tees. I was super excited. So y'all should definitely be sure to rep them too. And don't forget also across the other leagues, check out our new NBA podcast, Ball Don't Lie, featuring Vince Goodwill, Jake Fisher, Dan Devine and Kristen Peek, and our new MLB podcast, Bandwagon, featuring Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser, all available wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends, share the podcast, make it so that the Charles-free episode is the most listened to episode ever of You Pod to Win the Game, just to spite
love
them
it.
And see what happens.
I love it, Jory. I love it.
I know. Like, come on, guys. We have a really cool opportunity here. Tweet at us and let us know. Tweet at us and the Charleses and let us know how much you loved this episode in particular. And on that note, we will see you next Thursday.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.